And you can see that by 8 years, about 70% of people have got to that stage, but 30% of people haven't. So why is that? If you look at the number of people who've developed major thinking problems and a dementia, by 8 years, 40% of people have demented, but 60% of people have not. Why? And if you look at the number of people who've developed the involuntary movements with the drugs, you see a similar figure. So you can see this by collecting people and following them over time, people do not follow the same course. Now, why are there differences? Well, we've done a lot of work on this, and essentially I'm going to put forward the idea that there are two major types of Parkinson's disease as we see it. There is a type of Parkinson's disease which presents in younger people under the age of 70 who don't really have any problems with thinking when you first see them, and they have a disease which primarily targets the dopamine cells of the nigra. So this is a relatively pure dopaminergic disorder. In contrast, there's an older group of patients who have subtle problems with thinking when they present, who develop a much more malignant disease because this pathology spreads more quickly and they develop an early dementia in Parkinson's disease. So clinically, these two groups seem separate. If you actually look at some of the genetic factors for this, then there are two genes in particular which seem to be driving this process. One is this gene I've already mentioned called tau. So the tau variant that you inherit seems to govern whether your Parkinson's disease, not only whether you get Parkinson's disease, but whether it will progress slowly or quickly. And the other is this very interesting mutation in a gene, which I haven't got time to talk about, which is related to a thing called Gaucher's disease, which again is relatively common. So in our study, 10% of patients with Parkinson's disease have a variation, a mutation in this gene, and all patients with that mutation tend to do very badly with their Parkinson's disease. So not only can we tell that there are different types of Parkinson's disease, but we're starting to understand the basis for that from looking at simple genetic variation. So what does all that mean for new treatments? Because you can say, well, that's a bit depressing, really, because if I'm on this side of the curve, that's not good news. Well, what I'm going to tell you is that it's good news for everybody if we can recognise that there are subtypes, because that influences how we can model the disease, and that will influence what we can do therapeutically. So what are the implications for this? Well, I would say the implications for this are twofold. Firstly, in these patients over this side who have a disease which mainly affects the dopamine cells, these patients will do terrifically well with therapies which are designed around dopamine replacement. So whether you take drugs, whether you have cell therapies, whether you have gene therapy to replace the dopamine cells. In contrast, this group over here, where we are looking for drugs which actually stop the disease, would be the ideal group to target. Because we know these patients are going to do badly, we know the disease is going to progress more quickly in these patients, so any drug that really can impact on the disease is going to have a profound effect on this group, and this group should be selectively recruited to trials for disease modification, which currently doesn't happen. In drug trials of Parkinson's disease, almost all patients in this group are excluded from all studies because they're not deemed to be appropriate, whereas I'm saying I think they'll be ideal for some of the disease-modifying therapies, which I'm going to come on to briefly discuss. So what about this? Where are we with these type of dopamine cell therapies? I'm not going to talk about growth factors because I haven't got time. I'm just going to talk a little bit about cell-based therapies because that is something which is very much in people's minds, and also it's something which I've been very much involved with. So if we just park all of that to one side and just think about dopamine replacement therapies for Parkinson's disease, then this has largely involved taking the dopamine cells out of the aborted fetus. So the most successful transplants to date have involved taking the developing dopamine cells out of women who've gone for termination of pregnancies. Once they've decided to have a termination of pregnancy, the tissue is offered up for medical research if they consent, and in some places that tissue has been used to transplant patients. And when it has been used to transplant patients, it can have a profound effect on their clinical course. So here is a patient in Sweden who had a transplant in the late 1980s. Before they had their transplant, on the best therapy as existed in the late 1980s, which is obviously different to what it is now, that patient spent two-thirds of the day off. In other words, you know, despite taking the medication, it appeared as though the drugs weren't working for two-thirds of the day. The dopamine cells were then harvested from five fetuses, transplanted into one side of the brain, and the patient was followed up over time. 3 years after they had this transplant, the patient was now on all day in the face of no medication. So a transplant of dopamine cells from aborted fetuses had taken them from being off two-thirds of the day to on all day, and all their drugs had been stopped. On the scan, which looked at dopamine in the brain, you could see that at the site where the tissue had been implanted, there was a slow increase in signal. So during the 1990s, there was huge optimism that using dopamine cells to treat people with Parkinson's would be amazingly beneficial and should work as well as any other treatment that was out there. Unfortunately, the Americans then did two, what I would regard as premature studies, where they took patients with Parkinson's disease and they either gave them a cell transplant or they gave them a pretend transplant. So they did these two double-blind placebo-controlled trials. So just to explain that, if we were going to do it on a big scale, I would take all of you and you'd all be in my trial. We would follow you for a few months, and then every single one of you would go to theatre, and you would have a hole drilled in your head and a transplant, and you would have a small hole half drilled through the skull, and we would pretend to transplant you. So you don't know whether you've had the treatment or not, and then we would get another group of people to assess the patients to see whether they were better. Well, in these two studies, the patients who had had the active treatment versus those who had had the pretend treatment didn't feel significantly better. So the trials seemed to fail, and there were problems that some of the patients developed involuntary movements as a consequence of having the transplant. So as a result of these two trials, which were published in 2001 and 2003, the whole field of cell-based therapy for Parkinson's disease stopped. So as of 2003, nobody has had a cell therapy for Parkinson's disease from a reputable centre because this data says it doesn't work. And that is the very prevalent view in North America. If you believe that, then the problem you have is how do you explain this data? So here we have two patients who were transplanted with Parkinson's disease 15 and 13 years ago. These patients are now 26 and 23 years into their Parkinson's disease. Their dopamine signal in their brain is normal. Their score on this thing called the Unified Parkinson's Rating Scale Motor Score is less than when they presented a quarter of a century ago. And neither of these patients are on any medication. Now, the Americans might say this is a placebo effect. I say if that is a placebo effect, let's do it, because if you can get that much benefit from it, it's worth having it. But it's quite clear that these two patients have benefited enormously and that these patients have not. Now, why have they not? And what do you do with this information? So we spent, in 2006, we started analysing this data, looking at all of it. And 3 years ago, we were in receipt of a grant from TransEuro. These preliminary meetings were kindly funded by the Parkinson's UK. And I should say, without that funding, we would never have been able to have that meeting, and we would never have been able to write the successful grant.